The next 100 million people to learn about NFTs could care less about the tech.
As we move into a world of more utility and more real-world benefits that can actually be felt and seen by people, that isn't just a useless pixel on a screen, I think that tide will begin to shift.
We thus need to simplify the tech drastically. We need to understand who those users are, what level of comfort they will have with the tech, and then abstract away the technical terms.
Know your audience. Welcome back to the sixth episode of Not a JPEG, a podcast for creators and entrepreneurs building and innovating within NFTs and Web3.
Where each week we explore everyday sectors of modern society and how NFTs will revolutionize how we start, scale, and sell businesses. Now, before we get into today's episode, if this is your first time here, welcome. I'm Katarina. This is Michael.
Hello.
We're super happy to have you here. If you're listening to this on any podcasting app, please hit the subscribe button to stay up to date with any of our future episodes. And if you're watching us on YouTube, looking at our beautiful faces, hit the subscribe button and drop us a comment. We'd love to interact with you. Finally, if you're on social media, TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn, check us out at Not a JPEG Podcast. We post little 1-minute snippets of the most important points we make in every episode, which are great to reflect on, share with your friends or family, and continue to engage with everything Not a JPEG.
Love it. I'm really glad you mentioned the part about the snippets. We've really been doing our best to isolate the strongest points and give them to you about 3 times a day. So, moving on. Today, we are building on last week's episode and continuing our discussion about why NFTs are such a dirty word nowadays and how you, as a brand or as a creator, can navigate this as you jump into the Web3 and NFT space.
Yeah, last week we really laid the foundations for this episode, specifically discussing the most prevalent arguments against NFTs and how brands and entrepreneurs should consider navigating them. If you haven't listened to it yet, stop this episode, go back to episode 5. It's really important that you take a moment to understand these perspectives. You can't approach launching a successful project if you don't have empathy and you don't have understanding of both perspectives. It's really important, especially if you're an established brand.
And we do our very best, by the way, Katarina and I. You know, obviously we are very pro NFTs. We are very pro Web3. We try to remove that bias when talking about this. And we love looking at both sides of the coin and really understanding, okay, is there something we may have missed? Is there something new? You know, any new use cases or arguments against it. And we love to bring that to you as soon as we understand it.
And I think that even you'll notice in episode 5, we do tend to find some sort of middle ground. You know, it's not quite black or white. There are some points that we do agree with, you know, but it's not cut and dry, you know, it's this way or it's that way. But this week, we are diving into specific examples of existing established brands that have dropped NFTs in the last year, what they did or didn't do to navigate these issues, the public's response, and then how we're moving forward in this present day and age. We then take the lessons from what they've done and boil it down into some really important considerations that you can then apply to whatever launch you plan in the future.
Exactly. So we all know by now NFTs are a bit of a dirty word. Whether we like it or not, there is some stigma attached to it. And aside from educating future adopters the way we have tried to, you know, in our future episode through our snippets, the word itself really could use a bit of a rebrand. And as we move into the next phase of NFTs, you know, NFTs 2.0, if you will, we will see more utility. We will see more real world use cases, and that tide will slowly begin to shift. But of course, until we get there, we are here right now to support those who are wishing to build, innovate, and create within the space in the present day. So for those of you wishing to innovate within your industries, to pioneer within your respective industries, there are a few important things to think about. So let's dive right in.
Yeah, I think the most important thing to think through is to have a very thorough plan in place to handle the polarity of the word NFT in your existing customer base.
Yep.
So new brands or businesses, especially those ones that are being catered towards those already in the NFT community, you don't necessarily need to worry about or plan for the polarity of this issue unless your target audience is very polarized towards NFTs. Your customers are new. You know, you have the opportunity to build your followers to whatever value proposition you want.
Yeah. Now, for those who have an existing brand or business and you're ready to jump into the space, you really need to know your active consumer base's feelings towards NFTs and how they feel about Web3. Otherwise, you do risk a little bit of backlash from your audience. And we're going to dive into several examples that show you exactly what we mean from four fairly well-known and respected brands. And
they're quite diverse.
Quite diverse examples, and show you how they've what they've done right or wrong. And at the end of the day, we'll take away some points that you can apply.
Right. So let's get into it. First example is one that I'm a big fan of.
Yep.
The Avenged Sevenfold Death Bat Club. So for those of you who don't know, Avenged Sevenfold is an amazing metal band from the 2000s. I grew up listening to them in high school. I still listen to them, and I cannot wait for them to go on tour again. It was really exciting to see them foray into Web3 when I learned about their NFT. They have, especially the lead singer, M Shadows, he's a bit of a gamer, a bit of a techie guy, and he's been in crypto since 2017 or earlier with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. You know, he owns a CryptoPunk. Like, he was very forward on it. And so they were one of the first, and I think still one of the only metal bands that have attempted to drop an NFT. And that's for a few reasons. We're going to get into that. So let's go back. Let's talk about their NFTs. So they launched the Death Bat Club last year. And what they essentially created is their fan club on steroids, okay? Here's some examples of what kind of value they put into this NFT. It's immense. So specific merch, which is pretty standard for most NFTs, meet and greet with the band at concerts or events, tickets access specifically through Live Nation, like one of those pre-sales specifically for the Death Bat Club, parties at NFT NYC. They're working right now in the sandbox. They have land in the sandbox, building future games for the Death Bats and opportunities within sandbox for people to integrate. There's also, he did mention in an interview, possible future ownership of the sales of record.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool. They also have some of the Death Bats that are limited one-on-ones, which have specific one-of-one perks, like a guitar lesson from Sinister Gates, who is one of the best guitarists of all time, stage signed and played bass guitars, and playing a round of golf with M Shadows or a game night with him. On top of all of that, they are also giving IP rights for the Death Bat. So this is insane utility.
Yeah, I was going to say that is a lot of utility that the band has attached to their NFT. So much for just being useless pixels on a screen.
So the frontman, M Shadows, said, you know, this is pretty identical to buying a club membership on Patreon or PayPal.
Makes
something
sense.
They had before. They did tie in a lot more value, obviously, because this is a Web3 integration that they couldn't do before. But he says what the most important aspect of this compared to just being part of the fan club normally is the ownership aspect, the IP aspect. Fans are now, and he's noticed this, are feeling more inclined to make something of their fandom rather than just be fans. Going that extra mile to contribute overall. And it's now giving back to their lives in a way that they couldn't have before. Like, the fans are getting way more out of it from just loving Avenged Sevenfold.
So they're collaborating with the brand in a way.
Yeah, basically. And like, an example that he gave in an interview was during NFT NYC, the band hosted parties, but the fans also hosted their own parties and got together and connected. And this is just one example. Because of the Discord that they have, he's seeing this super fandom that has never been stronger with Avenged Sevenfold. Deathbed holders are going to be the biggest fans of the band ever because their fandom benefits them via ownership of the NFT and everything that Avenged Sevenfold produces, right?
Right. So essentially, their contributions through the Deathbat Club increases the value of the club, makes it more exclusive and desirable, and that power is fully in the hands of the community. And this really goes back to what we talked about, I believe, in episode 4, where we highlighted a brand's role within NFTs, whereby the fans have a stake in the game and are active contributors.
Yeah, he thinks, though, the frontman, M. Shadows, he thinks that the ability to own the IP above all other utility is the most important because it's allowing fans to create something. And on top of that, when they're done being part of the club, you know, with a Patreon signed club or a PayPal's, you know, sign up for a club, you know, once you're done with it, you can't sell it. With this, again, when we talk about this in the previous episode, you can sell your NFT and give someone else the opportunity to be part of the club and get all the perks that are there, especially if it's a limited membership. So this is more valuable, in the band's opinion, than any fan membership that has ever existed in music.
Right, because fans can build the value up of this pass, of this club membership, and then pass it off to someone else to either keep going with that legacy while also getting a little bit of a kickback, right,
yep,
for what they've contributed.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Unfortunately, Avenged is the only metal band going into Web3 thus far with a fan club. And the lack of other bands currently entering the space, apparently many of them are building in the sandbox very silently. But it was, you know, Avenged was first. And due to the divide that occurred with their launch, many bands have held back from pursuing with their NFT projects. So let's delve into that a bit more. So post-announcement, there was a whole entire section of Reddit that was formed and dedicated to hating on Avenged Sevenfold, how they sold out, how they're grifters, because of this awesome fan club that they've created. You know, they were now being called scam artists, and they have never done anything scammy ever. You know, it's just a complete blatant obtuse generalization about these people who literally have a great track record of being there for their fans.
I was going to say, it is very unfortunate that a lack of education from those hating on the technology, because they either don't understand it, its implications, or they're just parroting and regurgitating a headline that they've seen, that they've read once and have formed their whole opinion based on that. It's a shame to see that present within such a high caliber project like this one, especially when it comes to the beloved fan base, you know, of this well-established band who has a great track record, like you've said, and has never let their fans astray or done wrong by them.
Other than not launching the album yet or going back on tour, but that's another thing. This divide with Avenged fans has prevented, as I said, other metal bands to come in. And it's challenging to see this because, you know, unlike other musicians that have gone into Web3, specifically electronic music artists, the fans for EDM music and metal, they're very different. You know, metal fans still buy vinyl and CDs, even if they don't have a car to play that darn CD.
Right. There's definitely a bit of nostalgia within that group, right? A longing for the analog. And, you know, historically, the punk and metal scene has been anti-establishment, anti-tech advancement, anti-capitalist. So, you know, and they tend to skew older sometimes and more diverse than, you know, an electronic music fan base, which definitely tends to skew a little younger. So it totally makes sense why we saw that reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Although the band are avid crypto and Web3 participants just on their own, the backlash from the Deathbat Club launch was so bad that M. Shadows regrets even calling it an NFT and wishes that he explained the fan club as just a fan club where you buy it with a MetaMask wallet and your receipt is this cool bat image that you can show on Twitter to say you're part of the fandom. Right.
That makes sense. And I bet if they knew their audience's feelings before launching, they could possibly have mitigated some of that backlash, softened that language, and shredded a little more carefully with exactly how they communicated what they were launching.
Yeah. So right now what they're trying to do and focus on as they're continuing to build out utility, finish the album, prepare for tour, is focus on education and inclusion and finding ways for people to get a taste of the Death Bats Club without owning the NFT, so they can understand that it's not a Ponzi scheme, it's not a scam, it's just that looking like that because it's called an NFT. You know, for example, Shadows was saying during their next tour, which I'm super excited for, they are planning to have separate fan sections for the Death Bats with Death Bat specific merch and experiences that only NFT holders are going to get to have, which, you know, fans who aren't Death Bat holders are going to see that and be like, oh, I see now. I understand what this is. I want in.
Right. That is really smart. So basically showcasing those real world benefits and exclusivity that's attached to that digital asset during a time where others can physically see it, not just digitally.
Yeah, exactly. Makes sense. That physical ownership and that physical value, again, that is going to win in the end of the day. All these real life applications, once they're physically manifested, I think it's going to change everything for the Death Bat Club. This hopefully will turn into these haters eventually, you know, buying a pass of their own, taking the time to learn about it and realize that, you know, Avenged Sevenfold are not scam artists.
Right. Or neither is the NFT uses pixels on a screen.
Yeah.
And that will be true for a lot of things. I think as soon as that barricade and that mental leap is made, because right now NFTs have only ever been digital assets. As we move into a world of more utility and more real world benefits that can actually be felt and seen by people, that isn't just a useless pixel on a screen, I think that tide will begin to shift and it'll become easier to play in the space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. So that's a perfect strong start, a really well-known band. Number two, Reddit. Reddit, you know, as a platform, needs no introduction. To quote them directly, they're the front page of the internet. And the snoo is their logo. It's the little character, little alien in their logo. So the crypto snoo was Reddit's first leap into NFTs. They minted June 2021, and they essentially tried to go the route of digital collectibles and digital PFPs made by Redditor artists. And they are said to be, in a way, part of Reddit history, given it's their first leap into the space. And they took their avatar, which is already a customizable feature on their platform, and they made it ownable by giving away, or selling rather, unique one-of-one NFTs that also have a little bit of benefits, like they'll make your post glow.
Yeah, it's cute. So they took a very different approach with launch compared to Avenged Sevenfold. They made a very conscious effort to not emphasize the word NFT in order to ease the, you know, easy to complain Redditor, their subconscious bias to the tech. They only made reference to the blockchain and how it relates to ownership and did not use the word NFT once during that initial announcement.
Right. And I believe they also targeted it specifically to the cryptocurrency subreddit, mm-hmm. and they made the announcement there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this also helped with trying to level out the bias. Another thing they tried to do was integrate the MetaMask wallet application with a Redditor's account. So it makes it a bit more accessible than that whole argument about, oh, I don't have a wallet, it's hard to get to. They kind of tried to deal with that.
Right. And the public's reaction was probably best described as diverse.
Yeah, that's definitely how I would describe it. Diverse.
You saw comments all across the spectrum. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's classic Reddit, right? And I was actually very surprised looking through the comments how diverse the comments were. I thought it was going to be a lot of hate. But the main comment that was coming back up was the fact that people are too poor to buy into it or at the current price, and how Ethereum is just not accessible right now. So that's not really a negative thing. Most people were like, oh yeah, I'm too poor to buy this, but I hope whoever does enjoys it.
Right.
Right. So, you know, Reddit did price their first NFT as very inaccessible. I think it started at like 1,000 USD. And at one point, I think it was like close to 70 or 80,000.
Right. So it definitely helped perpetuate this whole idea that NFTs are incredibly expensive digital investments.
Yes.
and probably maintained a bit of that level of intimidation and disgust towards it. I do feel this would have been one of those times where maybe the project may have been better served and more successful as, you know, 10K unit project with the price, you know, being like 50 to 100 bucks versus 1 to 10K to start, which is definitely a little steep, but I'm sure they had their reasons for it.
Yeah, I'm sure they thought about it and that was a direction they wanted to go. And it was successful at the time. It was during the bull run. So I think the last snoo trade was 7 months ago and it was 57,000 Canadian dollars, which was pretty high. So overall, Reddit made an attempt to be inclusive. And I was surprised at how the Reddit responses were mixed. I was expecting more hate, but you know, that goes to show that they did an okay job at trying to be inclusive to a degree.
Yeah. And, you know, that last sale may have been 7 months ago. And obviously we are in a bit of a bear market. But I do assume that many of the holders are most likely sitting on their NFT and will, you know, utilize it down the road, as I'm sure Reddit has future plans to integrate NFTs into their platform in a more significant way. I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah.
And what makes a lot of these first projects valuable, the same way that, you know, the rookie cards of a lot of amazing athletes and sports collectibles has, is that if you are the first foray into something, the first launch, the first time a brand, a person, someone is playing in the space, that thing will have value down the road historically, as, you know, within the collector community, of course.
Yeah,
not
collectible
saying,
value.
Yeah, there'll be collectible value in that. So I'm sure we'll see a little bit of that.
So the next example is a collectibles example with Candy Digital and Stranger Things Season 4. So for the Season 4 launch of Stranger Things in July of 2022, Candy Digital, which is a digital NFT agency, they partnered with Netflix to build an entire in-house, in-ecosystem marketplace to buy and sell digital animated posters akin to NBA Top Shots.
Right. And for those out of the loop, or if you've been living under a rock, don't know what that is, NBA Top Shots are essentially the NBA's foray into NFTs via these collectible player highlight cards. Basically sports cards that are animated NFTs.
Yeah, it's very similar to this poster. So they created a couple different products. They had this upside down mystery box, which was 9,428 upside down, you know, collectibles, which contained this poster, essentially. It's the 17 characters within Stranger Things 4. And they were available for initial purchase at $11 USD each.
That's very affordable.
Yeah.
Very good entrance
for
price.
For a poster? Absolutely. And so they also had the Hellfire Club bundle, which was all of the posters together for $275 USD. And there were 99 of these specific bundles. So fans were also able to earn a limited edition digital collectible of Vecna if they completed one of the two collection challenges, basically buying posters, having certain posters, and they'd get them. Those who got all 17 posters got a Hellfire Club t-shirt, early access to every future Stranger Things digital collectibles that Candy's going to offer in the future. And they also introduced a rare limited edition physical Stranger Things for memorabilia.
Interesting. So I guess there's one more season coming, so they'll probably have something up their sleeves for that.
Oh, for sure.
And I think based on what Katarina just said, it is very clear to see that this particular project had a very strong focus on the product and the world that it was built around and the fans of Stranger Things. It was not focused on the tech. Mm-hmm. It was not focused on the format either. But the product itself was front and center, as was the experience and interaction with the product, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like to say how they really tried to create this very much friendly ecosystem that didn't feel NFT-ish at all. They used Palm as the blockchain, which is a sidechain to Ethereum that uses proof of authority and claims to be a 0% carbon footprint. So there's the environmental challenge covered. It's also for faster transactions and it has no gas fees at all. The project still had a Discord for fans and holders to discuss, but the prices as well, as we said earlier, were very cheap. Even in the secondary market, they're $5 to $12 per poster, which is really affordable and really reasonable for a digital collectible.
So overall, yeah, like Katarina said, the project was affordable, it was environmentally friendly, it avoided jargon, and it even had a little bit of utility.
Yeah, definitely.
Sprinkled
the shirt,
in.
The future limited access, that
right,
sort of thing.
Right.
So, you know, let's just take a step back and look at Candy as an agency to really understand why they took this approach. They describe themselves on their website as a next generation digital collectible company offering digital assets for fans and collectors. Fans and collectors can deepen their love for sports, culture, entertainment by buying digital collectibles.
Right. So they don't even use the word NFT at all in how they describe themselves as a company.
No, definitely not. So a very interesting take here on trying to be as inclusive as possible. The most important consideration with their launch, though, is that the main audience they targeted with these posters were people who were already NFT natives. So
right.
They had pre-mint and pre-list launches with Doodles, MFers, Probably Nothing, the Atom Bomb Squad, and Artifact Holders. So they all got allow list spots, and they weren't really targeting the public.
Right. So this, I would say, is probably one of the reasons why there wasn't as much polarity around the project, right?
Yeah.
And why, you know, we didn't see as much backlash because it was essentially sold to the people who are already sold on NFTs. And, you know, it sold out, right?
It did sell out.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I spent a lot of time trying to find hate on this project, and there was nothing on Twitter. Which is, again, because they were targeting people who were NFT lovers.
Right.
And, like, the only hate I could find was news coverage comments, like, on Hypebeast. There was one comment who said, who would ever buy this? But so there wasn't a lot of hate. And I guess it goes to show you that if you take all the steps to make it as non-NFT-ish as possible, you can launch something and have good success.
Right. And even that response of who would ever buy this is just, you know, those who obviously don't see much value in digital assets or digital collectibles and haven't made that mental leap yet that they're no different than something we can hold physically. Just
yep.
A digital manifestation of that that will be fairly important to our digital versions of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, as the future unfolds.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the success of the project long term, it's pretty hard to figure out because it's not on OpenSea, so I can't see secondary sales data. It was all hosted within the Candy ecosystem, and the NFTs are only sold within that ecosystem.
Right.
It's kind of centralized.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that they did it that way because that removes a lot of the barriers. And selling to existing NFT evangelists is definitely one way to go. It's one way to approach a launch. However, it does limit your market reach, and it can actually exclude any of your other followers that you have and
mm-hmm.
not necessarily strengthen the relationships that you have with those other brand supporters. It really depends who the NFT is a product or service for at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
right? If it's for NFT aficionados or for the public, and there are definitely pros and cons to both. So it all depends on how you want to approach it.
Yeah, absolutely. What kind of value you want to drive for your audience.
Right, right.
So our final example.
Final example, a very recent one at
mm-hmm.
that, from arguably the most well-known name in coffee, Starbucks. And Starbucks Odyssey just announced September 12th, not too long ago. I would say they are probably one of the first big companies to integrate NFTs, you know, within an industry-leading loyalty program at scale.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we touched very briefly on the future potential of loyalty cards, of rewards programs, and how NFTs play a part in that. And that will definitely be the subject of a much larger, very specific deep dive into that topic in a later episode. But for right now, we definitely wanted to highlight how Starbucks went about jumping into this, you know, right into the deep end.
Yeah. So the perspective of launching, the way that they framed it in their press release, you know, it's a new tech-focused loyalty program that happens to be built on the blockchain using NFT cornerstones.
Was that verbatim? That happens to
Not quite verbatim, but basically it just happens to be like, you know, an NFT.
Oh, it just happened to be here.
Yeah, this revolutionary tech that is, happens to be blockchain. How it was taken, however, incredibly poorly. The main tweet complaints, however, were irrelevant to NFTs, or they could have stemmed from the disparity argument, which we can get into a bit later. The main tweet that I was able to see was Starbucks is avoiding support of the unionization of their employees, and therefore their NFT project is bad. So a bit of a reach, but we'll discuss it a bit more. The other main complaint was that they're creating a program that creates no real value, and people were picking on the wording of the fact that they can't describe what their experiences are.
So. Right. So that first argument, totally valid, unrelated to the loyalty program, of course,
yes.
But a totally valid attack at the company. The other two, a little weaker, a little softer. But here's the thing. Massive corporations, obviously, there's a love-hate. Many people use them and buy from them. Many people shit on them and hate them. They will always have backlash regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very easy to hate on a company like Starbucks, especially. And same thing with Amazon, all the big, big, big boys. It's capitalism at its finest.
Absolutely. So we'll get into that a bit more. But before we do that, let's explore the program so you have a better understanding of what it looks like for those of you who don't know, right? So the Starbucks Rewards members and their partners, which are their employees, in the United States are given the opportunity to earn and purchase digital collectible assets that will unlock access to new benefits they've never offered before. So the old rewards program still exists. So you can still go get your free cookie and coffee, okay?
That hasn't goodness.
Changed. Yeah.
Thank okay? goodness.
Just in case. It's not going anywhere. But the Starbucks Odyssey is going to be an extension of this existing rewards program and using your existing login, so no wallet is needed, right? The way that they're formatting this is they're engaging customers in the Starbucks Odyssey journeys, which are a series of activities such as playing interactive games or taking on fun challenges to deepen the consumer's knowledge of coffee and the brand overall.
Really? So that's interesting. See, so what you're getting is consumers to interact with the brand in a very unique way outside of just that one moment mm-hmm. when they're holding the cup, when they buy the coffee or the pastry or the sandwich or whatever, which is interesting because you really don't think about a lot of brick and mortar retail companies outside of the times that you're physically in them. So mm-hmm. to bring the experience
outside
and into the digital world, into the palm of someone's hand, definitely breaks the boundaries of brick and mortar in a way.
It's bringing a whole new opportunity for interaction, almost like a whole new product or service line.
Yeah.
Right? Compared to what they already offer, which is really great. So as you do these journeys, you get rewarded with journey stamps, which are NFTs.
Of course.
And you can also buy limited edition stamps in app with just your credit card. So there's no need for crypto. And it's all bought and sold within the app, kind of like the Candy Digital platform. You know, it's a very easy way for consumers to now claim ownership over a brand that they love so much. And Starbucks do have those people who are like, oh, I need my Starbucks right now. Like, this is a really great way to take that love of Starbucks and own it. Right? Stamps are going to also have various rarities assigned. So there is going to be that buy and sell value that's also going to come into play as the app progresses.
Right. And the points that are collected with the stamps will unlock very unique benefits. So, you know, virtual espresso martini making class was mm-hmm. one of them, right? Access to unique merchandise and artist collaborations, invitations to exclusive events at some of the Starbucks Reserve roasteries, and even trips to the Starbucks coffee farms within Costa Rica. So some tangible real world value, right?
Yeah.
I'd say.
I'd actually say a lot of these experiences that they use as example in the press release are things they already offer at Starbucks Reserve. They're just expanding the reach now on their digital platform. So you don't necessarily need to be in New York or Chicago or, you know, Washington or LA to experience the very curated Starbucks Reserve experience. It's now digital and available to you in a whole new way.
Right. And so to add to that, the stamps themselves that you are collecting will feature iconic Starbucks artwork, right? Co-created mm-hmm. with Starbucks partners as well as outside artists.
This
right?
is a really, really important utility.
Yeah, well, I think this here is super valuable from an art perspective, mm-hmm. whether you like it or not, because if the artist that creates the stamp, maybe they're small, maybe they're up and coming, if one day they get big and they blow up, suddenly that stamp has a lot more value than just a loyalty program to those who are collectors and within the art market, right? Suddenly, that stamp, being that artist's first foray into NFTs, has a lot more value,
yeah.
which is interesting. Imagine, like, it's like if you had your wallet and you opened it and suddenly that, like, stamped card that you've got in your wallet
or
the gift card you have had, like, immense value, which is insane to think about, but that's something that is definitely possible with NFTs.
Yeah, the whole entire marketplace set up for that. Right.
Yeah.
Versus like selling a physical, let's say the artist that did the design on your gift card got big. Like, it's going to be hard for you to sell. With NFTs, it's all integrated, all seamless, all instantaneous. Mm-hmm. Right. So very, very cool utility all around with this Starbucks Odyssey program. If that wasn't enough, they are also saying they're going to donate a portion of the sale of limited edition stamps to causes that matter to Starbucks employees and Starbucks reward members. So, you know, donating to the unionization of the employees, like, you know, maybe that's an avenue in there to solve that issue. Who knows? Right. Overall, they also are going to only start building this out after the merge happened, which was recent, to use proof of stake blockchain on Polygon, which then also uses less energy than proof of work blockchain. So they really thought about every angle here.
Yeah, I was going to say they gave a lot of utility. They did a great job combating a lot of the issues of the environment, the challenges of accessing crypto and, mm-hmm. and all that jargon, and just making the whole thing seamless and integrated within their own ecosystem and beyond just coffee and cake pops.
Twitter, on the other hand, had a lot of things to say, to the point where Starbucks had to turn off its comments, which is a whole thing that people also hated on.
Of course.
So, you know, I couldn't find on Twitter one positive review of it. You know, the opposing views were it was risky to go into NFTs because the market's dropped 75% and could eventually be on life support. So again, thinking that the current bear market in NFTs is a sign that it's going to die. You know, have you looked at stocks recently in every financial product? Let's just say that. But the main argument that kept coming up time and time again is that there's no actual benefit to employees here. You know, it's infringing on employees now needing to explain what NFTs are amongst everything else they're doing. And basically, people on Twitter were trying to bring to light the fact that Starbucks corporate recently busted the union building employees in the United States, which has nothing to do with NFTs, no matter what you say. The only, I guess, leap that you could try and make is say, oh, you know, corporate said no to unions, so and now they're putting out this NFT, and NFTs are a scam and they're making money for a few people, so it's affecting only the corporate and the poor employees are not going to benefit from this. Again, NFTs are not all scams that people get rich off. And I would say that Starbucks isn't going to risk its entire reputation on building a Ponzi scheme.
Yep.
Right? You know, this doesn't seem like it's about money and Starbucks making millions and millions in seconds.
Yeah, it's about creating a way for people to interact with the brand, like we said, outside of just that brick and mortar retail shop or just that one time when someone has coffee in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a cash grab, you know? And trying to relate the corporate's union busting moves with their choice later to then put out an NFT it's a very, very, very weak leap.
Yeah, they're two different things. And you can be angry at that while still being happy about the other one. They're not mutually exclusive, I guess.
Not at all. Right. So the other things that were hated on were the fake perks and that, you know, aren't physical food or coffee. Again, that whole idea, I can't hold it, therefore, what's the benefit? You know, people were picking on words like this new coffee experience, which was used a couple of times in the press release, and saying that, oh, I don't know what that is, or saying, why would I ever want to do a virtual espresso martini making class? Okay. These experiences are probably going to be unveiled as time goes on. This was just a press release. Okay. You know, all of these comments did lead to Starbucks having to turn off their comments, and then people started hating on them for turning off the comments, being like, oh, you turned off the comments. It must be so bad. Like, it's just a vicious cycle. But if we had to summarize it very succinctly, the arguments seemed like they were stemming from the anti-capitalist disparity of the rich and poor. And as we said in episode 5, with a bit further understanding of NFTs and having an open mind and exploring things beyond, you know, the few people who are making a lot of money off of pictures, this anti-capitalist view could dissipate.
Although I would say, coming from a megacorp like Starbucks, that might be hard to accomplish.
Of course.
It does seem like the response has been fairly negative online, and, you know, rightfully so in a lot of ways. But we'll only know the true results of whether or not this was a success once they release either sign-up data or, you know, we kind of see how it rolls out across stores and online. But overall, a big take-home point for you is they did a really great job trying to resolve all the issues most people against NFTs like very often bring up. So it's bad for the environment. Well, they use Polygon proof of stake. Well, I can't get crypto. There's a barrier there. Well, you can use your credit card. It's so hard to create a MetaMask wallet. Well, you can use our app. It's seamlessly built within. There's no utility. Well, some benefits were listed that were possible with points, and they didn't get rid of their old existing system. So you can still get your cookie, what have you. And I do imagine, truthfully, they will most likely integrate Starbucks Odyssey into their existing rewards program so that people don't only get these digital benefits, but they get physical benefits. And just like we said before with the Death Bats Club, same thing there, right? Once some of that utility becomes very tangible, that's like the perfect sliver in the Venn diagram between the digital world and the physical, where you kind of get a digital asset that gives you physical world perks and benefits. And that's when the vast majority of people go, okay. So it's not just useless pixels.
Exactly.
I get it.
Once it's unveiled and they execute on this, I think we're going to see a massive shift in the way people perceive it and uptick in use, right? Despite all that, though, they still got enough hate to turn off the comments. So what they maybe could have done is not even mention NFTs in Web3. Like, they were very, very proud of the fact that they're using NFTs and blockchain technology. That could have been maybe one way to try and mitigate the hate, but I don't even know if that would have happened, to be honest.
I mean, from a PR standpoint, if most of their customers are upset by it, maybe it should have been a consideration. However, doing what they did in the way that they did it was a very bold move, and honestly, a step in the right direction for all of us smaller creators and builders that aren't, you know, massive corporations, because they are paving the way to, you know, bring in that next wave of mass adoption that will in turn make it easier for some of the smaller players.
Absolutely. It's a really great example, not even just for small guys like us, but even other big corporations can look to Starbucks and be like, okay, wow, this is what happened. This is what they did. These were the results. I can do the same thing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So from music to coffee, we've highlighted a couple of brands and their leaps into the space. We've touched on a few things they did right and wrong as we've been talking through the examples, but let us succinctly give you something to take away. And I would say that the main takeaway point for brands and creators right now is to know your audience.
Absolutely. Yes.
If you're not marketing to the Web3 community directly, and instead you're launching a product and project that's being marketed to your existing audience, make sure you really understand how they feel about NFTs and Web3. It's absolutely imperative. So here are a few questions you should ask yourself.
First, is an NFT the right fit to serve the needs of your audience? You know, not everything needs to be an NFT right now, and that's okay. Maybe your time with an NFT is going to come later. It is your responsibility as the marketing team, the owner of the brand, entrepreneur, whatever, to really understand your audience's needs, like with any product, and how an NFT is going to supplement those needs and help build a deeper brand affinity and trust overall. You know, how are you benefiting a community? Have you taken the time to fully understand what it means to participate in Web3 and benefit a community versus an audience?
Right. So if you are making an NFT and you said yes to the first question, what is the purpose of this NFT and what KPIs or metrics do you expect from launching the project, right? Mm-hmm. How do you measure success? If it is financial, you know, ask yourself, is your audience in a position to spend money on digital assets? Are they willing to? Is that something that entices them at all? Do they see value in it, right? Outside of the individual, if you're an existing brand, you likely aren't entering the Web3 space to make, you know, millions for little to no value, right?
No, definitely not. Although people are going to try and claim that is exactly what you're going to do, like creating something that has no tangible value to take the poor person's money,
mm-hmm.
right? As a brand, you will want to create something to extend your brand affinity that connects you with your existing supporter even more deeply and possibly educates them and convinces them on the value of participating in Web3. Existing brands should be trying to build new forms of participatory value. And, you know, this is not something to hate on unless you're coming in with the wrong intentions. As long as you're providing another cause, community ownership for your customers to rally behind rather than just, you know, consume your product or service, I think you're going to be offering something really valuable.
Right. So we've touched base on, is the NFT really necessary? To what purpose, or how do we measure success? And three, if so, and we're doing this, what language are we going to use? How will we communicate and discuss this forward-facing to our community? How are we going to present it to our audience?
Mm-hmm.
What language will we use? You know, will it be techie at all? Will it be something like, do you call out NFTs and Web3 directly? Or are you going to defer to using more friendly language? Will you soften it a bit and you call them digital assets or digital collectibles? Something that is more easy for the average person to fathom and wrap their heads around while removing that stigma. Because that's the other thing, right? Knowing that stigma exists around the world, coupled with your audience's feelings, that I think will really help you figure out how to approach it and how you should be talking about it. And if the answer is no and they dislike the word, then how can you make the experience safe and educational without dropping terms that isolate people or dropping terms that turn people off, right? Maybe it is worth challenging your audience with lingo and creating educational resources like Katarina said, which in turn will build brand affinity. But how you communicate it can potentially make it or break it. So it's something that really needs to be thought through.
Mm-hmm. In the short term, you know, these questions are really important to think through right now if you're considering entering Web3.
Right. But I would say in the long term, NFTs really need a rebrand.
Oh, yeah.
As a community and as an industry, we need that word to take on new meaning, right? And that needs to come from all of us. You know, less emphasis on the tech and more on the value and experiences and benefits that people get from it. And this all stems from the fact that us early adopters have always tried to explain NFTs in a very techie way. And that explanation does not serve the average consumer, right? It brings its need into question. They don't give a shit, right? Early adopters, we love NFTs. We understand the technology and we see its future applications. We see its future potential. And since we understand the value that way, we assume that others will also see it, right? It's like, hey, this is great, right? Look, it's great.
Yeah, they'll fall in love with it for the same reasons we did.
Right.
But, you know, that's not true. For widespread adoption and understanding to occur, we need to stop explaining NFTs for the tech and get on the factual level of the next wave of adopters, which will be based on what do I get out of this if I can't hold it? Or, you know, if there's something identical or similar already pre-existing in the real world. Utility will be paramount,
right,
for the next wave of adopters. You know, this space is still so young to provide value to all parts of life in the NFTification of everything, but give it time. And with the intro of digital ID, it will become necessary and convenient for all businesses, services, products to have a digital arm, right? So I really like to quote Coinbase's VP of product, Sanchan Saxena. You know, he really, it was a podcast I was listening to, and he really said it so succinctly, and it's something I think all of you will value here, to quote him. The next 100 million people to learn about NFTs could care less about the tech, even less than the first 100 million. This is super important because they're coming to buy a piece of art or music or something to represent them. They aren't interested in the details or jargon. We thus need to simplify the tech drastically. We need to understand who those users are, what level of comfort they will have with the tech, and then abstract away the technical terms.
That is spot on. That is spot on. The next wave of adopters won't give a shit about the tech. The next wave doesn't care how it works, but they care about what they'll get out of it. Mm-hmm. They care about those tangible benefits. Show me the benefits. Show me the perks. And if they're enticing enough, I'm here to stay. Mm-hmm. I'm all good for it, mm-hmm. right? In sum, NFTs are currently a fairly touchy subject for the public, but there are ways to be able to navigate that. In time, each of the sticking points from the haters and naysayers will become moot and irrelevant, and more will be convinced or forced simply to use the blockchain in their everyday lives in order to keep up with the challenges, the changes, and the advances in technology. There will, however, always be people against NFTs, just like there are people against social media, just like there are people against the internet, just like there are people against computers, phones, and so on. But in the end of the day, knowing your audience's feelings towards NFTs is critical right now to strategize as to when, what, why, and how your NFT will exist within the current market.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you for listening
to episode 6 of Not a JPEG. As I said in the beginning of the episode, if you enjoyed hearing what we have to say and want to keep up to date with everything Not a JPEG, hit that subscribe button on whatever podcasting app you're listening to, or on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, the bell, and shoot us a little like. And if you're on social media and want to get all the little tidbits and snippets of all the episodes we've been putting out so you can share them with your friends and family very succinctly, hit us up at Not a JPEG Podcast. And remember, tell everybody you know that Not a JPEG is your new favorite podcast. Thank you so much.
See you next time.